Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
The will to succeed is important, but what's more important is the will to prepare. Bobby Knight. On this episode of Sound Practice, we will discuss organizational alignment and physician coaching, ways to make healthcare delivery better for both patient and provider. Next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Mohammed Saad. Dr. Saad practices internal medicine in Florida, where he's an attending physician at HCA Longwood Regional Medical Center. Dr. Saad holds an MBA degree and serves as a physician coach. Mohammed Saad, welcome to Sound Practice.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our absolute pleasure. As you know, this is the podcast of the American Association for Physician Leadership. So we're always interested in people's pathways to becoming a physician leader. Can you tell me a little bit more about your pathway on your journey to having become a physician leader?
Absolutely. So I'm a polymath and I'm a lifelong learner. So I graduated medical school almost 20 years ago now, and I've always pursued a pathway of inquisitiveness and learning. And when I was a chief of medicine, I took a special interest in learning about the business of managing healthcare. So I got a 4 or 5 year degree of MBA with specialization in healthcare just to learn about the craft of leadership and managing. During my tenure as a chief, I was able to help the hospital achieve better numbers with regards to disruptive behavior, patient satisfaction, and some other quality scores. I was then, and I'm grateful to all of those who took interest in me, I was then promoted to an associate chief medical officer position, where I continue to collaborate with people, and we achieved some interesting successful results with regards to operational efficiency, quality metrics. And then I was offered an opportunity to build two simultaneous departments, which is the hospitalist department at Longwood, as well as an internal medicine residency program. It was a very enticing goal. I was actually really interested in it, and I learned a lot from it. And I think we've done a phenomenal job. I put a lot of the details as much as I can on my LinkedIn profile, which I recently started. It was a beautiful, a very rewarding journey. Throughout those journeys, I've helped those hospitals achieve, like I said, some quality metrics and hospital rating improvements, specifically with regards to the leapfrog and patient satisfaction, the overall rating in the department. And I learned a lot. What I learned and realized the most is that when you lead such a human enterprise, like a hospital department or a hospital organization, it all boils down to the human element of it. So that's where I took another off-ramp, if you would, or an additional interest into the makeup, the buildup of both the psyche and the physique of a human. That's why I got interested in lifestyle medicine, and I became board certified by the American Board of Lifestyle Medicine. Because I realized that when you're managing a report or managing a colleague or a patient, you ought to deal with them as a human, right? As a holistic approach, mind and body. And I also took a special interest in coaching. So I'm an International Coaching Federation certified physician coach because I truly believe that the ability of a leader will boil down to not just the organizational understanding. It's what I call the three P's, process, productivity metrics, and persons. So that's why I took that interest and I became an ICF certified coach. And I'm also a certified physician executive. And that's where I'm at now.
Well, that's very, very impressive. Now, you're also an expert in organizational alignment. And I admit to not knowing much about it. Can you give me the 30,000 foot view? What is organizational alignment?
Sure. That's a very near and dear topic to me because I think it's crucial to leadership and productivity. So I want to start off by saying that we have been dealing with a stubborn statistic, which is that about 70% of employees, the workers in this country, are disengaged. They don't feel like they belong where they work, right? And that has been a, like I said, a stubborn number for years. The other statistics that was beautifully laid out, believe it or not, 10 years ago by the Economic Forum, it showed that, broadly speaking, some employees are just what they described in the publication as satisfied. And that's basically my salary, my survival as an employee, my benefits, and I'm doing what I have to do and I go home. So that paper classified their productivity index as one. So fair and square, what you get is what you see, and that's it. Now, that paper also said that if you are somebody who's engaged, your productivity can go up to a 1.5. So you'd be 1.5 as productive as somebody who's just not really interested, right? Now, if that is dialed up a notch and you're somebody who's inspired, somebody who's got an emotional heart-to-heart connection with the workplace, the productivity could go up to 2.25. So you're more than twice as productive as a base rate productivity. So to me, alignment is kind of the combination of what happens when you're both engaged and inspired. And to describe alignment in a visual guide, I would like to describe what I call the alignment triangle. So every organization has a cascade of values. It starts off with the vision, which is, what is our identity as an organization? What is our destiny? And that gets cascaded into a mission, which is, what's our destination? How are we going to get there, right? So some series of long strategic plans, and then that's how we're going to get to our destiny and embrace our identity as an organization. And then as you go from that central view of the company to the frontline people, those values get cascaded into goals. Those goals are broad. And then those broad goals are broken down into what everybody knows as a SMART objective, which is specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-based. Now, the craft of a good leader is to further break that down, break those SMART objectives down into one, which is unique iterations with one deliverable, and that's the finish of a project. And then if you combine some projects together, you make a program, such as a hospitalist program or a residency program or a surgical program. And then if you combine those programs together, you make an ongoing operation such as a hospital. So the whole idea here is that a middle manager or leader or senior leadership really need to keep that visual, uphold that visual, and then make sure that individuals at the very front line understand that whatever they do, it could be as simple, as unique as one iteration, one quick 2-3 week length project, is in fact in line with the overarching vision and mission laid out by the organization at a central level. The keys to that is, as I said, giving those employees the autonomy, making them feel they matter, making them feel that they are important, and engaging them, and then giving them a meaning of what they're doing. So that is, in a nutshell, the visual description of alignment. Now, to quickly further describe this, there's three broad descriptions of alignment. One is vertical alignment, which is, how do you vertically connect vision and mission to a unique iteration at the front line, such as a project? And two is horizontal alignment, which, for example, if you're a internal medicine doctor, how do you align with somebody from surgery? How do you align from somebody in the emergency room? That's horizontal alignment. And then there's also diagonal alignment, which is, if you're an internal medicine doctor, how do you get along with people in pharmacy or people in the physical therapy department or radiology department where you don't really have a clear connection with? All of this falls under the definition of alignment.
I think that that really helps contextualize this for me. Could you give me an example of how you use organizational alignment with your team for the betterment at your hospital, maybe a specific project and how it worked from start to finish?
Absolutely. So as a residency program director, and this is a success story. So as a residency program director, residents are supposed to do what's called a quality improvement project. So they will go in and they come up with an idea and they say, okay, this is a unique iteration with a unique deliverable. And in our case, at the frontline level, the residents had to sign up for a QI or quality improvement project. And then the hospital needed some improvement in the length of stay of heart failure, pneumonia, and COPD, which is bread and butter operational goal for our hospital. So what I did was aligned that individual frontline effort, which is the QI project, with the overarching mission of the operation, the broad goals of the organization, which is a systematic improvement of operational efficiency in the length of stay of heart failure, COPD, pneumonia. So instead of just having the resident have a limited endeavor, which is the QI project, I built that project with the help of the leadership of the hospital and the residents, all in line, again, vertically and horizontally, with some, multidisciplinary teams, all hands on deck, so that whatever project this resident executed is in fact to the benefit and in line with the overarching broad goals, vision, and mission of the organization. We had a great success with a significant reduction in the length of stay, and an operational efficiency became a DNA of the hospital we work at.
Tremendous. So I'm just wondering how, I guess there would be different metrics, but are there certain metrics that are common to all organizational alignments to determine how well it's working?
So it depends where it starts. So there's a big managerial debate, which is, do you manage top down or do you manage bottom up? And the answer is nobody knows for sure. And it's a locally operational, organizational dependent answer. So if you're somebody who's managed top down, then you just have to align within that direction and find a way. And that's, again, the craft of leadership is how do you frame the request from leadership? And that's a common pitfall, by the way. So if a leadership says, we want to shorten the length of stay, or we want to save money, it's about the craft of how you take that message and then craft it to the frontline workers and show them the meaning of reducing the length of stay. Show them the intangibles in saving the money, as opposed to, we need to save money, and then the frontline workers would then feel we're just working for money and there's no purpose in what we're doing. If there's a venue where you can manage bottom up, then again, back to the autonomy and the purpose of the frontline workers. If you have a frontline worker who says, I have a great idea, as opposed to just, shutting it down, you can always say, okay, well, this is a project. Let's pilot this, but let's find a way to make it in line with the overarching mission, the broad goals and objectives of this organization. So again, to answer your question, it depends where you're starting, and it depends what the overarching vision mission of the company is. You just have to align top down and then bottom up.
Makes sense. I would like to transition to your role as a physician coach.
Sure.
When and why did you begin coaching fellow physicians?
So it's been about 2 years now, and it's been a great journey. And the good thing about my own path is that I've seen the contrast between being somebody who directs, who gives directives, versus somebody who's a coach. I like to think of a coach as a loving, caring, thinking partner. So instead of you just having a one-way street where you're just pointing fingers and saying, we need to get this done, we're under the gun, a coach is somebody who's a partner in the journey and would make people around you feel heard and helped as they move from point A to point B.
So tell me about characteristics of a great coach. What do you think makes up a great coach?
That's a great question. Emotional intelligence is key. Me and some other co-authors or great coaches, we just turned in a manuscript that talks about, it's a narrative review in an organizational psychology theory and leadership. And in the heart of all of this is emotional intelligence. And if I was to break that down, it would be asking very powerful questions, listening with empathy, listening with curiosity to understand. And in the heart of all of this, a coach, like I said, is a thinking partner who is really minded with the interest of their coaches, their mentees, people who are their training. As a coach, my main target is to help people that I coach reach their very best version of themselves.
Are there some areas of medicine that are more coachable than others?
I don't think there has been studies that looked into this. So I can't give you a scientifically backed answer. But what I can tell you is that coaching works for everybody. There's been studies that use functional MRIs that showed that coaching actually at an organic level yields better results than other forms of just telling people what to do. Because that journey, the beauty in the journey of discovery and inquiry, which a good coach does as they help their coaches, is key to what we call in coaching the aha moment, right? Where you come to a conclusion where you're like, wow, how did I ever not find that connection? That's where you start exploiting great brain resources that I don't think you find them any other way. And most definitely not when you're being directed, you know, under the gun, chop, chop, get this done. That doesn't help. So coaching works for everybody and it yields good success, but I'm not aware of, you know, which areas are better than others.
It's typically one-on-one, right? I mean, is coaching really individualized teaching? And if you have more than one person, it becomes more of a what we would think of as conventional teaching, or am I thinking about this all wrong?
No, you're not wrong. The best case scenario for coaching is one-on-one because it's a heart-to-heart. But there's also room for what's called group coaching. And there's actually, in the world of metacognition, there's something called crowdsourcing. So when you have a group of learners and there's a skill gap between them, you can coach them as a group, and it actually helps expedite the closure of this gap. So one guy is really emotionally intelligent about something, then everybody else will learn from that guy within that group in one stop. But it's best when it's done at an individual level, because again, it's an individualized endeavor to help people reach the best version of themselves.
Tell me a little bit about what a typical coaching arrangement looks like for a physician. How many hours a week? How long does it last? These kind of basic things, if a physician was interested, if he or she wanted to be coached, what would they expect?
So again, in the heart of coaching is that this is about you. So a good coach is not going to be somebody who says, well, here's a prescription for you and here's how things will work. It's actually the opposite of that. It is going to be, you're in charge, it's at your pace, and I'm just partnering with you to help you get to the best version of yourself. You're kind of stuck between point A and B. I'm reaching out, trying to help you get to where you decide, how you decide at your pace. But in generality, successful coaching endeavors range from 3 to 6 months. And the meeting intervals should be every 2 weeks, give and take. just to keep that stream of thoughts and keep a dialogue, a mental dialogue between the coach and the coachee. Usually every session is like 50 minutes, 45 minutes. And it's, again, empathetic listening. There's five levels of listening. So good coaches use level 4 and 5, which are the best. Again, asking powerful questions. If you're someone who's got a background in that field, so for example, if I'm a coach with leadership background in medicine, obviously it would make life a lot easier for me because I understand to an extent how things work in the world of, you know, hospital leadership, medical, the market forces, if you would. But obviously good coaches are inquisitive enough. They can actually probe and understand, you know, almost in every field.
Do you find that people come to you with specific goals for you to coach them, to help them achieve those goals? Or do they just come to you feeling like, I want a better version of myself? Help me identify how to do that.
It's a mix. So oftentimes what happens is by the time people, and this is unfortunate, by the time people see coaching, there's already some decision fatigue. So the characterization of the problem can be a little, you know, a little vague, and the role of a coach is to actually help frame the issue, help streamline the situation. But again, it has to be where the coachee or the person who needs help is the person who is in charge and is the person who ultimately has the authority of the path. But to answer your question, it's kind of a mixed picture.
Dr. Saad, we hear all day long, every day about physician burnout. And it occurs to me that coaching could be helpful to reduce burnout. Am I correct in thinking along those lines?
100%. 100%. And in fact, I just listed this in my manuscript, 50% of the American task force is quietly quitting. And the toll on the global GDP that this problem brings is a 9% reduction of the global GDP. And what worries me is that AI is coming and motivation is a balance, intrinsic versus extrinsic. And AI is essentially an extrinsic motivation, right? Or an extrinsic force. If you're intrinsically so fatigued, so tired, so not prepared, that could actually lead to AI undermining your own motivation to learn, to discover, to enjoy the journey of working hard to find that best version of yourself. Because now all of a sudden you can outsource that mission to a computer without having to deal with this. So that's what really worries me about the landscape, the ecosystem that we're living right now.
I'd like to come back to the AI issue because I think it's extraordinarily interesting. But I just want to clarify your thoughts on a coach versus a boss. How do they differ in daily operations?
Sure. If you don't mind, I would like to, you know, do a quick role play. Is that okay with you?
Absolutely.
So let's say, Mike, you're a resident, meaning you're a training doctor. And last week, your results came out. Your in-service exam, which is kind of your litmus test for your academic readiness, came out. Results were not good. Right. And I'm just using extreme examples here.
Sure.
So I can meet you Monday and I could go in and say, Mike, have you seen your IT exams?
And then I would sheepishly say, yes, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Bad, that, right?
And yeah. It, yeah. And they're not good. Right.
Yeah. And then let's just say you scored 50%. Right. So okay. I say, Mike, 50% doesn't project that you're going to pass your boards. And I'm going to put you on a study plan. And if you don't show improvement, there'll be consequences. How does that make you feel?
Probably worse than the way I already felt coming into the meeting.
There you go. So unfortunately, because of the market forces, the world that we're living, some directors have inherently understood that this is just the way to go. I don't have time. He needs to find a way, or he needs to find somebody that helps him find a way, and then we're done. Right? The coaching approach would be as follows, right? Mike, how was your weekend? Anything exciting?
Well, I had these results that were not good, so it was kind of a dark weekend.
Well, tell me more about that.
So Yeah, I mean, I'm concerned about my results on this test and not really sure what to do next. I feel like I'm pressed for time on all sides, and this is not good.
Are you feeling anxious?
Absolutely.
Wow.
More so all the time.
Yeah. So listen, I have good news for you. Have you ever thought that anxiety is extra energy that you have?
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it. No, I hadn't thought of it in that term.
Yeah. So I have done this for a long time, and I want to tell you that this anxiety is a godsend. This is a lot of energy that you have right now. And I'm here so that I can work with you, so me and you as a team can figure out how we're going to use that energy to get you to where you need to be. How does that sound?
Well, that sounds a lot better than me trying to go figure it out for myself in a fit of anxiety.
Exactly. So I just gave you a very, very, like, you know, a snapshot into a 2-minute job, scenario A versus scenario B. That's the approach with love and curiosity and framing the problem in a way that make you appraise it as if there is more hope than anything.
Well, it sends out a message of hope and help, where the first version was, you've got a problem, you best figure out the solution, right? I mean, that just states the obvious with an air of discovery. Everybody in that situation knows they've got a problem. They're looking for how to reach a solution.
And then look at the two scenarios from an engagement standpoint. How did you feel? How engaged did you feel we were, scenario one versus scenario two? On a scale of 1 to 10, if 1 is the worst and 10 is the best engagement, how did you feel?
So with the role of the boss, I mean, you're at a 1-2 kind of category. But when you move into the coaching, then I feel much better about myself and feel hopeful and want to push forward and feel like I have someone helping me and guiding me on what I need to do. So I move up to an 8 or a 9 easily.
And that's the whole idea. This is why we have 70% disengagement, because people direct as opposed to partner and coach. You're on your own sets people up for isolation, disengagement, and loneliness versus we're in this together. I love you. I care about you. And we're going to make it happen together is where you set people up for what we talked about earlier, which is engagement and alignment and inspiration, which actually will double your, maybe almost triple your productivity.
Yeah, that's tremendous. And you can see how you would feel part of a team if being coached, where otherwise you're an individual actor out there trying to handle things on your own.
Absolutely.
So that was a helpful example. At least it was for me. Our time's drawing to a close, but you brought up AI, and I'm very interested in how you think that will impact coaching in the future and physician practices.
So again, this is a huge topic, huge and evolving topic, right? This is probably the topic of our lives. But what I would say is that I call this the alarm maneuver, right? When the alarm goes off, it wakes you up in the morning. Did you think the alarm woke you up? Or you actually are the one who set up the alarm and had a nice, healthy room temperature, you know, set yourself up for a nice, deep night's sleep, and you're organized. So it's very easy, to a point where you actually, maybe without the alarm, you would have woken up the same time, right? So that's the way I look at AI, right? Is it actually the alarm that failed me, or is it me that created this setup where the alarm either failed me or woke me up, right? So I think AI has to be read within the same context. And the brief take that I would have right now is, again, if you're somebody who has built a robust wealth of emotional intelligence, you've had a nice journey, you know how to interact with people, how to solve problems, AI will probably be a big asset, right? Because then it will just be another tool in your quiver, and you're just going to make what you make, but a lot faster, easier, and you can actually teach it to others. But if you're somebody who's still struggling with disengagement, feeling of isolation, the skill set's not really formed there yet, and you need to, you know, go through hardship of learning, it may, and I say it may, I don't know, but it may be that the AI extrinsic force will undermine that intrinsic growth that was waiting for you. And it all depends on the adoption. And that's where I think, you know, regulation is key.
Fascinating. A conversation that if we come back to in 12 or 18 months, may be a little different. So my guest has been Dr. Mohamed Saad. Dr. Saad, if audience members today are interested in talking to you about coaching or learning more about the subject matter, how best can they reach you?
So I have a LinkedIn profile, and people can easily reach out to me or whatever contact information. If you know, an email is fine. My email is out there, so I'm happy to connect with anybody and happy to help.
Excellent. Well, I thank you so much for your time and for your service to your fellow physicians. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike, and thank you, everybody, and have a great day.
My thanks to Dr. Mohamed Saad. His actions to help and improve his fellow physicians makes him a true physician leader. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpractice.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpractice.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org. Holy cow, Batman and Robin, Whitman Kapow.